Chapter 7. T'Pring. She had never wanted to be here in the first place. Here, being an isolated monastery in the desert of a planet that will never feel like home. Here, being only one of 10,000 surviving members of her entire species. Here, being anything her life has become in the past 5 years. T'Pring has always followed the path of logic in all things. It brings her satisfaction and fulfillment. It nurtures her natural talents, encourages her to develop a wide range of skills. Logic is not the antithesis of emotion, as some seem to believe. Rather, she has found that it enriches true feeling. Compassion, for example, is inherently logical, for it strengthens relationships and promotes better understanding between peoples. There is compassion in the eyes of these 5 immortal humans when they look at her. It simultaneously warms and repels her. She does not know how to respond to it. Perhaps she has been alone for longer than she cares to admit. 2 long, tedious nights and days after first meeting the immortals, sequestered in the monastery and disconnected from the rest of the outside world, they're finally ready to put this half-baked plan into motion. She's somewhat surprised that Niall is the one who comes to retrieve her. She's clearly the leader of their group, despite being the youngest among them. Second youngest now, T'Pring supposes. Should she be including herself in their number? What would that mean for the lurching path her life has taken? A thought to be set aside and meditated upon at a later date. The point is, surely Niall has better uses for her time than serving as T'Pring's personal taxi service. I can't think of anything more important right now than getting to know the new kid, Niall retorts cheerfully when T'Pring mentions this. She's acquired a stealthier mode of transport than the VSA's clunky all-terrain vehicle, a modified skimmer that hovers several feet over the sands. Starfleet issue, T'Pring judges, though she is no expert in such matters. You're part of my team, at least for this mission. I need to figure out how you fit into it. T'Pring lifts one eyebrow. If you are concerned that I may be a liability should the encounter turn violent, let me assure you that I am fully trained in the martial arts of my people and have used these abilities on more than one occasion, both in the act of self-preservation as well as the defense of others. So you really are the Vulcan equivalent of the Secret Service. I am unfamiliar with this term. Like, Niall drums her fingers along the skimmer's controls. Highly trained bodyguards for high-ranking individuals, but with an investigative capacity to the job as well. I have never been employed in personal security. The analogy is flawed. But in my former occupation on the rehabilitation colony, I regularly associated with potentially dangerous and unstable individuals, and therefore developed the skills to defend myself as needed. This work also gave me particular insight into extremist methodologies and viewpoints, which is why I was called upon to assist with the VSA. I'm not sure I would have liked your old job, Niall muses. I mean, I know it's not quite prison guard, but it was not a penal colony, T'Pring says, with perhaps more vehemence than intended. Its purpose was rehabilitation and counseling, never punitive measures. I do not appreciate such comparisons being drawn. Niall lifts her hands in a traditional sign of surrender. Okay, I hear you. I apologize for the implied offense. It was not my intention. T'Pring suppresses a sigh, chastising herself internally. And I should not have allowed my emotional response to dictate my reaction. I accept your apology. Thanks, Niall says quietly. And listen, me and my people, we've been around for a long time. We've all seen things we wish we hadn't, participated in deeply flawed systems, done things in our past lifetimes that we later came to regret. So please believe that my observations are never intended to carry any kind of moral judgment. I'm just trying to understand who you are as a person, not just your, I don't know, combat skills or whatever. I want to know what you believe in, what you think is worth fighting for. Whatever form that fight might take. That is perhaps an overly ambitious objective for the expected duration of this skimmer ride. Niall laughs. Hey, we gotta start somewhere, right? When she turns that dimple-cheeked grin on T'Pring, T'Pring finds herself strangely moved to reciprocate the gesture. She suppresses the impulse, of course. Their plan, if one could call it such, is simple. "We're throwing a party," is how Joe describes it, waggling his eyebrows in what he must believe to be a comical fashion. His husband seems amused by it, at least. Quinn rolls her eyes. Vulcans do not party. They host restrained and dignified public gatherings to honor their esteemed guests. T'Pring believes her tone is indicative of what humans call sarcasm. Anyway, Captain Kirk convinced Spock's dad to play along, Niall explains. So officially, it's meant to be a public celebration of Starfleet's continued support of the new Vulcan colony. But behind closed doors, Counselor Sarek is letting slip to the other members of the High Council that they will be announcing a partnership between Federation scientists and the VSA to advance research into Vulcan genetics with an emphasis on interspecies hybridization. With Spock himself, there is a model representative of Vulcan-human relations, given his mixed parentage and laudable achievements in Starfleet Command, Booker adds. "Think we've painted a big enough target on his back?" Niall snorts. I'm sure he's thrilled about that. He may well relish the implicit challenge, T'Pring says mildly. His childhood on Vulcan was difficult, due to the xenophobic bullying of many of our peers. He was the first Vulcan to ever turn down a position with the VSA, and from what I heard, he did so with style, as Terrans might say. Their own role at the event will be of a precautionary nature. Niall, Joe, and Booker have all assumed the guise of Starfleet security officers, and at least one of them will remain in close physical proximity to both Spock and his captain at all times. Nikki and Quinn will continue to mingle with the VSA researchers, as they have been doing, in case the suspected extremist from the genetics lab is yet among them. And your job is to stick close to Spock's father, Niall tells her. While we're hoping they decided to go after Spock, Sarek's high status among all Vulcans makes him a likely target for assassination as well, T'Pring concludes. Indeed, he has survived at least one previous attempt that I am aware of, some years ago now. His high-profile marriage to a human woman was a long-standing source of ire to the logic extremists. The more things change, the more they stay the same, Nikki murmurs. Joe glances a touch across the small of his back in passing, and they exchange a loaded look. T'Pring recalls her own bonding with Spock as children and experiences an unexpected swell of empathy, and perhaps the barest sensation of regret. The event itself is a sedate, cultured affair. It's held in a formal ballroom, all elaborate mosaic tiles and dark paneled walls, with exquisite chandeliers of multicolored glass overhead. There are brief musical performances scattered throughout the evening, as well as servers circulating with a variety of Vulcan delicacies. But primarily, as with most diplomatic events, it's about seeing and being seen, the opportunity for building relationships and initiating conversations. T'Pring has attended hundreds of such gatherings in her lifetime. On Vulcan that was, she was a daughter of a prominent house, and then a highly respected professional in her field. Her presence at tonight's event will raise no eyebrows. She is a recognizable member of the Vulcan elite, even now. And her supposed death was kept quiet to all but those who believed they caused it. So she makes sure to circulate freely through the assembly, pausing to exchange brief greetings and superficial observations with as many guests as possible, constantly on alert for any outward expressions of surprise. Of course, Vulcans are masters of their emotions, but that just makes even the slightest lapse of control all the easier to identify. She is also careful to keep Counselor Sarek in her peripheral vision throughout the evening, never straying too far from his person, just in case. As is to be expected in a mixed gathering such as this, the handful of humans present have a tendency to stand out. Most of the Enterprise crew members present are on their best behavior, showing proper respect for their Vulcan hosts and deference to their customs. And indeed, Vulcans have long experience with humanity's particular quirks and foibles as a species. T'Pring has never found their cultural differences offensive, though at times their overt emotionality can wear thin. Spock's captain definitely stands out. She has never been formally introduced to James Kirk, and sees no reason to initiate an acquaintance. But given his prominent role in Spock's life, she can't help but be curious. Kirk appears charming and gregarious, quick to laugh, but his eyes are ever watchful, assessing, bright with intelligence. A more formidable opponent than he might first seem. She would not wish to face him in a field of battle. Spock never strays far from his captain's side, though his own demeanor is as restrained as ever. She wonders what his experience must be serving under such a captain. From all accounts, they work well together. Good for them. If Spock is aware of her presence here this evening, he gives no outward sign of it, and she is careful to ensure their paths do not cross. She made her choice years ago. She will not give him, or herself, any reason to regret it. Quinn steps in beside her as the next musician is introduced, a talented lute player. Once the music begins, she murmurs, "May I ask a personal question?" "You may ask," T'Pring replies. "I will not be offended." "Spock mentioned that you and he were once bonded." "That is not a question, but yes, it is true." Severing such a bond is not an action any Vulcan undertakes lightly. And yet, many here tonight had their bonds severed against their will when Vulcan imploded, further compounding the trauma of the cataclysm itself. Quinn is better at controlling her expressions than most humans T'Pring has met, but there's that compassion in her eyes again, too much like pity for T'Pring to bear. She has never been a powerful telepath. In this moment, she is glad of it. She does not wish to know what the other woman is thinking. "But you were spared that tragedy, at least. You and Spock both lived." "Did we?" T'Pring says, more bitterly than she intended. "We survived, rather." Calling the aftermath of that horror living is perhaps a step too far. "Forgive me. I do not mean to minimize your grief." The lutist plucks out a haunting melody, the sound seeming to shimmer through the air around them. T'Pring breathes deeply, mastering herself once more. "No forgiveness is necessary. I know well that my choice to sever our childhood bond may appear callous in light of the circumstances, but I did so with Spock's full consent and active participation. Our minds had never been truly compatible. Not due to his heritage, as many of our peers assumed. But we could not make each other happy. It is as simple and inexcusable as that." Quinn is quiet beside her for long moments. Finally, she says, "That is a very human-sounding sentiment." "It would not be a factor for most Vulcans, perhaps," T'Pring concedes quietly. "But I find no logic in unhappiness. Life is too short for that." How else can she explain it? The crushing dread that overwhelmed her after Vulcan fell. The memory of a different pair of dark eyes, the touch of another's palm against her own, the easy compatibility she'd once known, now lost to her forever. She used to imagine a different sort of bond, one not entirely uncommon among Vulcans. Marriage was often a political arrangement, a logical partnership uniting two individuals. There was one spouse, with whom one performed the expected duties at the expected times, and then... there was no word for lover in the Vulcan language, exactly, but the general sense of it remained. She could be Spock's wife in public, and he could pursue his own interests out among the stars while she charted her own course, and their paths would cross every now and again as nature dictated, not unpleasantly. And other personal relationships T'Pring might form would be for her alone, a perfectly adequate marriage for them both. It is unthinkable to her now. "Everything I was, everything I had strove for and earned for myself, I lost all that when our planet was destroyed," she says, keeping her tone low and even. All surviving Vulcans were called here to build the new colony, to repopulate our race. There is no higher purpose for any of us now. I had no choice in the matter, and why should I? To opt otherwise would be more than illogical. It would be transgressive, selfish. And yet, Spock chose to remain with Starfleet. He can do much good there, Quinn points out, without judgment. Of course he can, T'Pring says, a hint of passion creeping into her tone against her will. He is a good man of extraordinary talent. I have always believed that. But such freedom has never been afforded to me. Envy is illogical, yes, but oh, how I envied that. To be able to just fly away. Quinn gives her the barest hint of a smile. Well, what's stopping you? The realization is staggering. The performance concludes to polite applause. Conversations strike up again. Quinn disappears back into the crowd after only the briefest press of her hand to T'Pring's shoulder. T'Pring remains motionless, lost in her own thoughts, paralyzed by them. And that's when one of the glittering chandeliers overhead explodes in a shower of multicolored glass. Later, she will be embarrassed to admit that her memories of the rest of the night are fragmented, disordered, like flashes of a dream. She remembers hearing voices shouting incomprehensibly, scattered screams. A Vulcan man in silver robes shoving his way across the room, phaser in hand. A splash of green blood against the gray tiled floors. She remembers thinking, "Counselor Sarek, I must protect Sarek. That is my job here tonight." And searching desperately through the crowd for him, trying to keep her feet as people surged around her. She remembers the brightly colored uniforms of the Starfleet officers, like beacons of order in the chaos, Booker taking charge of the evacuation while Niall and Nikki tackled the assailants. Spock engaged in hand-to-hand combat with another, his captain kneeling over someone soaked in red, and it takes her too long to recognize the color of human blood mixed with the red of Joe's uniform. She remembers the acrid scent of smoke lingering in the air. There will be slashes in her own clothing afterward, tiny shards of glass in her hair and ground into the soles of her shoes. Her undergarments will be stained with specks of green. Her skin beneath will be unblemished. She didn't even notice the pain of the cuts before they had already healed. Quinn emerges at some point alongside one of the Enterprise's actual security officers, dragging a member of the Vulcan Council along in handcuffs between them. Counselor Sarek is there, bleeding lightly from his shoulder, but otherwise unharmed, a forbidding expression on his face. She remembers seeing movement in the remaining crowd, something no one else was paying attention to, the distinctive whine of a phaser. There is no time for conscious thought. T'Pring leaps. And then she falls. It's all right, though, she thinks dimly, through the overwhelming flare of pain. She will get back up again later. They promised her she would. End of chapter 7.